There's a real art to running a restaurant well. Science, too. Let's face it, lots of skills and fields of thought have to be brought to bear to feed a room full of people successfully. Our first guest this hour has used lots of parts of her brain in becoming a successful chef and restaurateur. Ileana Regan writes about how she got to where she is and how she threatened her own success with alcoholism in a memoir called Burn the Place. Ileana Regan is the founder and owner of the Michelin-starred restaurant Elizabeth in Chicago. She also founded and owns Milkweed Inn, a bed and breakfast in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Food and Wine named Ileana one of the best new chefs for 2016. Ileana Regan, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the Food and Wine recognition. It referred to Nordic-style cooking. What is that?
Oh, hey, yeah, I can't hear you too well.
Okay, you sound a little far from the phone yourself. Are you as close as you can get? Ileana?
Oh, yes, hello?
Yes, yeah. Can you hear any better now?
Okay, yeah, I can hear you now.
There we go. Okay. I was referring to the Food and Wine recognition from 2016 that referred to Nordic-style cooking. What is that?
You know, let's see how I can talk about this. Nordic-style cooking, I guess, you know, they're terming that because of the new Nordic movement of food that they're using everything really local and really vegetable-driven. And so, you know, I think that that's very easily applied to anything, anywhere. You know, it's not too much of a step further than saying something is farm-to-table, but when it truly is. And also, I focus a large part on gathering ingredients, things that are foraged and edible in the wild, which, if you know, you read the book, you'll see that that's a large part of my history and my upbringing. So I think that that's where the two meet, and so people can easily describe it as that to really get an understanding of what I do. But at Elizabeth, we've kind of called it New Gather or New Midwestern. So kind of a play on that or a take on it, just to give people an understanding of what our focus really is.
And you grew up in northwestern Indiana on a farm. These are some of the most cherished memories you share with us in Burn the Place. But your mother sounds like she was the cook. Your father was the one who apparently taught you a lot about gathering and preparation.
Yeah, he did. A lot about gathering and preparation, especially wild edibles, mostly mushrooms. That was his thing, being of Eastern European descent and way back in the 40s and 50s when Gary was a metropolis and all the, you know, Europeans were coming in and everybody really migrating to the area to work in the steel mills because it was really a flourishing area at the time. A lot of the woods there are dense, they're beautiful. There's white oak and black oak and maple and just everything you can wish to have when you want to find some really great mushrooms because of the symbiotic relationships formed between those trees and the ground and the sandy soil. So all of them were always out in the woods, and my dad picked that up. He picked that up from his Polish grandparents, and so he passed that on to me, that love of having wild foods and being able to go out at different times of the year and pick mushrooms, and that was something that I really loved to do with him, and we still do that to this day. And, yeah, my mom was an amazing cook. She still is, and so we were always having fresh vegetables, everything always in season because of the farm. You know, it was only 10 acres, so it wasn't like an actual, you know, registered commercial farm or anything by that nature. But so I guess more of a hobby farm, but that really fed our family and, you know, just gave me a really good sense of what we can have and what time of year and cooking from scratch, you know, because we were bringing vegetables in from the garden when they're still warm and cooking those. And that's just something that I think can't be beat.
Truly. We get a great sense for the freshness of the stuff you ate on the farm. You have sisters, Ileana, much older than you, some already out of the house when the story starts around your fourth birthday. And you write, I was good at being alone. I was afraid of humans. But it sounds like you were quite caring toward the animals on the farm. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing. We had, especially for a young kid, you know, we were always finding litters of kittens because, of course, we had some stray cats, but they'd kind of live in the barn, and it didn't help that I took to feeding them all, and there was always wild bunnies, and we had chickens and sometimes pigs, and little bit of everything at different times, and it was really quite magical to be, you know, a young kid and around all of those things. So I really grew up with having a deep appreciation and love for animals. But also at the same time, you know, my dad raising some of those for the proteins that we had. And so I, you know, got to see the full life cycle of them and appreciate that, you know, having the actual meat from our home. Although sad at times, you know, because I grew a deep affection for these animals, you know, being a child and not quite understanding, you know, the whole working relationship between animals and the farm, and you know, thinking these are our pets. But at the same time, it just taught me so much about where I am today, and I guess the appreciation for, you know, the animals' lives and their deaths, and being thankful for that.
Right, a real sense of the life cycle there on the farm in northwestern Indiana. We're talking to Ileana Regan, who is the founder and owner of the Michelin-starred restaurant Elizabeth in Chicago, also founded and owns Milkweed Inn in the UP, Michigan's Upper Peninsula. She's written a memoir about the things that got her to where she is today. Her book is called Burn the Place. We'll explain the title in the next segment of the program when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with Ileana Regan and you in a minute 25. So you write in the book, Ileana, that by 5 you were destined to be an alcoholic transgender trucker carny. Did some of that come to pass?
No. Well, I love to take road trips. So, you know, we're not quite there, but maybe getting there. And as a child, was very confused about what my gender was and what my sexuality was from a very young age. Obviously, not so much the sexuality, but just I wanted to do what the boys did, and I just assumed that I was a boy, and that was that. And, of course, there was the love of, you know, the county fairs. And so, yeah, you know, maybe some of those imaginings were not quite coming to fruition, but they were certainly there.
Well, imagination plays such a big part in your childhood, clearly, and in the formation of you as a person. Tell us about the restaurant furniture in the barn attic and what that triggered in you.
Yeah, I can still remember that so vividly, and that's a big part of the book, especially telling my memories, as it's a memoir, is really capturing those things that just keep standing out to me as an adult and are just so poignant. But that furniture was in our barn attic from before, a little bit before I was born, because the restaurant closed right before I was born. And so, you know, 5 years later, sitting at the barn attic stairs and seeing all that stuff covered in dust was really kind of just so intriguing. Like, you know, we have this house, we have this barn, and then there's all this tables and chairs and stoves, and that just, you know, took my imagination that much further and my curiosity about what was going on and what happened there. And of course, my family was all still very deeply rooted in that time and place because it was still really fresh for them. And that was a big part of my family's history together, was events around the restaurant and you know, whether it was birthdays or Christmases or what have you. I not too long ago, maybe 10 years, took some old reels that I found and had them made at the time into VHS. So, okay, maybe 20 years ago. and we're watching those, and my sister Elizabeth, who obviously plays a big part in the book and in my life, watching her take her first steps at the restaurant, you know, on those videotapes.
Oh, wow.
And all of my family around, young and just youthful and vibrant. And so it was, that was just something that kind of, you know, has stained my memory and really kind of shaped me into who I am today, just having that kind of visceral feeling in seeing those things in so many ways. I was able to play out the stories from hearing the stories from my family, but also then combined with my imagination and just almost as if I could have been there, you know.
Well, yeah, and I must admit that the way you write about the aromas, we can almost smell the place. So it's quite a feature of your writing. We were just talking about Elizabeth. The restaurant in Chicago is called Elizabeth. You had a place called the Bunny Bakery. Those are both mm-hmm. tributes to your sister. Tell us about her.
Yeah, she was the oldest of us, and she passed away at the age of 39, the age I am now. Largely from alcoholism. It can be attributed to a couple other things, but, you know, with my understanding now of the disease and the way that works, I know, you know, I can in retrospect look back and know that that's exactly what happened. But she was really important to my life. She was almost like another mother. All my sisters were, because of their age difference between me and them. And so as they grew to be young women, spent time with me, took me on trips. I'd go vacation at their house in the summers. And that was a big part of Elizabeth and my story. And she was such a lover of food and some of the finer things in life that she just really influenced me at such a young age. And it seemed like everything we kind of did together was quite magical because she was fun. And, you know, sometimes you have these family members, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate. They're alcoholics or they're not, but sometimes moments with them can be scary and unhinged, but sometimes they can be completely incredible and magical, and she really created that environment a lot for us, especially when it was going out to dinner and her trying to get me to try new foods, because as a kid, sometimes we're picky about certain things, and there was wild, crazy things that I ate, like sardines from a can at the age of 2, but, you know, I'm like, I don't think I really want fresh tomatoes, you know, just having that childness about me, and she was able to break some of those barriers that I had and really introduced me to a lot of new things, whether it be fresh oysters or, you know, a roasted salmon dish with leeks or whatever it was she wanted to cook or wanted to take me out to eat. That really played a big part of opening my eyes to the world of food and created a romance about it. So even further than what I had grown up with.
Sure, she really helped shape you. We're talking to Ileana Regan about her memoir, Burn the Place, and she is the owner of a restaurant called Elizabeth in Chicago, named for her sister, had a place called the Bunny Bakery, also named for her sister's nickname. It sounds like, Ileana, your first professional kitchen and first drinking came about the same time in your life.
Yeah, I think that just, you know, was probably coincidental, little did I know that starting working in kitchens that was going to be, you know, I'd never leave the industry. And sort of makes sense. I tried to describe that as much as possible in my book because, as you know, there's so many things I touch on. It's not only food. It's about my alcoholism. It's about growing up in a rural area and having that queerness and not really understanding my identity or sexuality. And so there's all these broad spectrums, but really it follows through with that food base. You know, that's the string throughout the entire book. And restaurants take a very early role in my life, from those barn addicts all the way up until when I start working in them. And I think that I touch quite a bit on some of the alcoholism in my family. And as many people can probably relate, it's quite an ancestral disease, I guess, if you will, that can sometimes be present in our lives. And so that just, you know, just like everything else, kind of reared its head and was like, all right, here we go, you know, and it just kicked off at the same time.
You know, it's been said many times by many people who worked in the restaurant business how much drinking and drugging goes on, and I just wonder so it seems sort of natural, I guess, for somebody who gets into the business to pick that up, regardless of ancestry. But when you tried to get sober, I mean, was it a real chore given the proclivities of people in the business?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just lost you when you said when you tried to get sober.
Well, was it hard to get sober given the general run of drinking in the restaurant business?
Sure. I truly believe that there's so many industries that, you know, this is present in. I hear it a lot about being in the advertising industry and so many places, I think, and people can really relate to this being a part of their industry. But I think by the time that I was trying to get sober, it didn't matter for me where I was working. I was used to being around alcohol my entire life, so that part was never going to go away. So for me, it was learning how to really follow what was being taught to me, and really just needing to get to a point to where I needed to stay sober for myself and nobody else. And so the restaurants and the alcohol and all of that exists with it became a backdrop. And I, like I said, I was so used to it, it was never going to go away. So that really didn't affect me. But I know, you know, that experience is very different for everyone. And some people are able to quit drinking and then remove some of those things from their lives. But today, I'm able to be around it. It's in my restaurants. I don't mind going out with people who are drinking. And, you know, it's what life is. And I just work on myself and take care of myself and do the things that I need to do to ensure that I don't fall off the wagon.
Who got you to AA?
Quite a few people at different times. So I cover that a little bit in the book, and it goes anywhere from my family forcing me to go to an outpatient rehab, not really forcing me, I somewhat agree to it, but to one of my mom's friends from work taking me to a meeting, sometimes on my own will, looking it up and saying, okay, you know, this is, I have to do this thing. And so I spent a lot of my late teens and early 20s in and out of the program. But the one thing that I continued to learn was that the people around me I would see continually staying sober. And so it was just up to me to finally be done. And as I mentioned in the book, there was one time that I was just finally done. And it didn't come after some of the trips to jail. It didn't come after, you know, ruining a car, which all happened. There was many incidents that perhaps somebody without a problem would look at what had happened and say, wow, you know, you should definitely stop after that. But that's very different for people with addiction. And when it happened to me in my 30s, when I was actually 30 years old, I just got to a point, it was one night, and I was like, all right, that's it. I don't ever want to feel this way again. And I had learned many times going in and out of AA that was something that they said, like, you can stop drinking and you never have to feel this way again. And that stuck with me, and I didn't want to feel that way. So luckily, from that day on, up until today, I've been sober, so it's almost 10 years now. And my plan is to hopefully continue that. But again, as we say in the program, and many people use this in their own lives for multiple reasons, is it's just a day at a time.
Ileana Regan, congratulations on being sober. The book is called Burn the Place, a memoir, and we can invite guests to join us on the Jefferson Exchange as well. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So did sobriety help you get your first restaurant, or did you already have a restaurant and then got sober?
I didn't have a restaurant, but I definitely had the idea of what my career path was going to be, actually from quite a young age. I had developed the idea that I wanted a restaurant probably when I was 16 and spending time with my sister Elizabeth, so it's only fitting that I named my first restaurant Elizabeth. And I don't think that they're directly connected, but I know I couldn't have done the things that I have done in my life if I was still on the path that I was. So it wasn't because I put that down, maybe I would have gotten to the point of opening a restaurant. Maybe it would have failed miserably. Like, I don't know. I don't know what my life could have been or what it would have been. And even getting sober, I think if it happened any earlier in my life or any later, my story might still be different. So it's really hard to say. Maybe, you know, that's my existence in some other parallel universe that I'd have to visit to really find out what I'd be doing had the situation be different. But I think that I would never give up. You know, that's my life, I feel like, is always on the line, and it's right behind that first drink, you know, and if I were to drink again, my life would dramatically change. And so I don't stop drinking necessarily because I don't want my life to change, but also at the same time, I do. It's a scary unknown for me, and so I really don't know exactly, you know, which came first, but I do know that I have a clarity and a direction in my life, and without drinking, I'm able to really say, this is what I want to do, or this is what I'm going to do, and actually work towards achieving those goals.
The name of the book, Burn the Place, refers to a fantasy you've had, and apparently more than once. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think that there's many metaphors that this can really represent, and in the very beginning, I took the most literal one. Obviously, I'd never want to kill my employees or burn my restaurant, but it doesn't mean that there's times when it feels so hard and so heavy that, you know, maybe a Molotov cocktail on the roof wouldn't be that bad of a thing. You know, we hear about it a lot in the chef industry and in other industries, you know, especially we see this more and more in the media and in real life with the suicide rates of chefs increasing because it's really hard. And there's times when you can feel hopeless. And like we're talking about with the alcoholism and drug abuse in the industry, that only adds to more of the hopelessness. And luckily, I know that there are ways out and ways to find balance in my life without necessarily having to burn the place or having to, you know, remove myself from the equation. And it's a really hard industry. There's a lot of pressure, especially when, you know, we get these much desired awards and accolades, like the Food and Wine Best New Chef and James Beard nominations and Michelin stars. It's beautiful, and it's really just so rewarding to have the recognition for the long hours and hard work and dedication, but at the same time can also put a lot of pressure on one to maintain everything that they're doing and worry and stress. And for me, not only am I the chef of my restaurant, but I do the books and the payroll and the HR and the social media and just everything, because it's my restaurant Elizabeth is a small 24-seat restaurant, and my inn in Michigan is even a smaller thing. So when you add in all those components and the management, I don't think anything in my life, I don't think I could have gone to school for management and still been prepared for managing people. So, yeah, there's moments when you think, okay, I'd just like this all to disappear. But, you know, I don't want that to overshadow my true gratitude for what I do and what I have, because my love of cooking and serving people and hospitality is far outnumbers that. But I think Burn the Place is also this idea of, okay, like, here I am at this point, and there's actually so much left to do. Not in terms of maybe Elizabeth, but my life and where am I going with my career and how is it going to change? Because I know in 10 years from now, I might not want Elizabeth. I might not be able to have Elizabeth. So I'm just in a place of change. And so that is another idea of what Burn the Place is.
Elizabeth is the name of Ileana Regan's restaurant in Chicago. 24 seats, as she mentioned. The smaller Milkweed Inn is a bed and breakfast in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Her memoir is called Burn the Place. Ileana Regan, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. It's a very engaging book.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. Short break on the Exchange. When we come back, Josh Gross with this month's edition of Rogue Sounds coming right up.